Ground ball to shortstop. Kim will go to first. The San Diego Padres get their first no-hitter in the history of the franchise. It belongs to San Diego's own Joe Musgrove, sending the Friar faithful into a frenzy.
Welcome in, Kiora, to another episode of the Podfathers, a Slam Diego Padres podcast. Here on an early Sunday morning, coming to you on the mics, Los and Walls, per usual. Los, how are you feeling, my friend?
What's up, Podfather family? We've been waiting so long for this. It's been a long time coming. Yes, I'm talking about Trench Grisham's return to the Padres. No, I'm just playing, guys. Obviously, we did the unthinkable, the unimaginable. First no-hitter in Padres history. I still can't believe it. I mean, for me personally, obviously winning a World Series is the goal and a big, like, life dream of mine as a huge Padre fan. But 1B to winning a World Series is seeing a Padres no-hitter. Just to be able to check that box and finally get that monkey off of our back, it was amazing. I didn't think I'd see it. I mean, we've been so close so many times. I think it's we've had 31 hitters. We've had 23 no hitters through the eighth before last night. I did not think I'd see the day, just how unlucky we have been. But Walls, tell me about your Friday night, what you were doing, what you were thinking. Let me hear it.
So Friday night, I actually was installing a stomp pad on my new surfboard that my parents got me for my birthday. Shout out, mom and dad.
Yeah, happy birthday, by the way. 27 as of last Tuesday.
Ooh, yeah, it's gonna stay there, I think, for a few years. But I was had it up because I always love to do something when I'm watching a Padres game, just because, you know, I like to be productive with my time. 3 hours a night, I like to squeak in a couple things you want to get done. And I remember I was lining it up, getting it all set up, and then here comes the fifth inning, and I'm like, he has a no hitter right now. But like in the back of your mind, just being a Padres fan, you're like, something is gonna happen. There's gonna be like a broken bat bloop or something. And then I think did he hit Gallo in the fourth, something like that?
It was the fourth. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was watching the game with my brother Patrick, and he was like, oh man, the perfect game's gone. Like, just, you know, we're like, just joking around. Come the seventh, that's when it kind of got real. I was like, yo, these Rangers hitters have no idea what is coming. Like, he's throwing backdoor sliders when they think it's going to be a fastball way out of the zone. And then, yeah, come the ninth, I mean, I was so insanely nervous, just so nervous, couldn't get a grip. And then when it happened, we just exploded. I'm glad that no one really lives around us, because they probably thought someone would have been seriously injured or something, but we just went absolutely berserk. It was obviously, hadn't seen anything like that before as a Padres fan. So it just felt like, one, relief, you know, that, like you said, that monkey off our back, and two, just, you couldn't even write a better storybook tale for that. I mean, the kid is he's a hometown kid that grows up wanting to play for the Padres. He gets traded in his second start, throws a no hitter for the San Diego Padres. Like, it was unreal. And I was honestly speechless, like, after the game for so long, I couldn't even wrap my head. And the next morning you're like, did that really happen? And sure enough, here we are. We got a no hitter finally.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was poetic the way it happened, who did it. It took 53 years, and it was worth the wait to see a San Diego kid do it. Me personally, I was went to grab some drinks after work with my girlfriend, was watching it on my phone, and then we left, and I was listening to it on the radio, and I get home and I throw it on the TV, and I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention as much as I usually do to the game. But by the time I got home, I was like, okay, there's no runs. Musgrove is dealing. Like, has he even given up a hit yet? So then I turn on the TV. I look at the box score on my phone. Yeah. There's a big zero. And I was like, oh my God. And then I turn on, it's the sixth inning at this point. He's getting through the sixth. Turn the TV on, and I can see it at the bottom, no hit through 6.1 innings pitch. And I was like, oh, my God, this is happening. So you text me at this point, yeah. And you're like, dude, do you see this? And I was like, don't even say it. I said that to every person that texted me. I was like, don't talk to me. I had to throw my phone into the next room, because I didn't want to talk to anyone. I didn't want to. I showed my girlfriend. I was like, look at the TV. Something crazy is happening. Don't say it, but something crazy happening. And then we were literally just like glued to the TV. Yeah. We did not move from our spots until the final out. And yeah, I mean, I went crazy. I couldn't believe it. I called my dad. My phone blew up. Like, it's insane, man. We finally did it. And hopefully we can get another one soon, because yeah, that was an amazing feeling. And we have the guys in the rotation to definitely pull that off. A couple of no hitter team Padres no hitter history for everyone, because even though we haven't had one, there's definitely a lot to talk about there. It all starts in 1970 for all my boomers out there. Clay Kirby had a no hitter through the eighth inning against the Mets, and he was pulled. He was pinch hit for. They were down 0-1. The Mets scored in the first inning off a walk, and legend has it that we've been cursed ever since. Recently, that happening at the queue at Qualcomm, and that was recently demolished. So, coincidence? Did it get lifted there? I don't know. But finally broke that. Curse is over. There's 306 no hitters in MLB history dating back to 1860s, 1840s, whatever it may be. So it's an incredible feat. And I mean, he was one hit batter away from a perfect game, and there's only been 23 of those in MLB history. He was just so dialed in that he was so close. It would have been even more just poetic if he was able to get the perfect game plus the no hitter, you know?
I know. And when you look at the stat line too from the night, if you don't look deeper into it, all you see is 9 innings pitched, no hits, no walks, no earned runs. And so you're like, oh, we got a perfect game here. You look, no errors, if I'm not mistaken. And then you look and you see the HBP right there. And he just let one slider get away from him. But that's just like, that just shows you, okay, first of all, obviously how difficult it is to throw no hitter. Like, you don't even have to go into that. But a perfect game on top of that, there's a reason there's only been 23 of them, because that's all it takes is one pitch that's yanked just a little bit and it goes right off a knee, you know? So, and then on top of that, just to show how effective he was, he faced 28 batters out of a minimum of 27. So you cannot get more clinical. And obviously no hitters never like on the wall, you know, the writing's not on the wall for a no hitter, but if he was going to do it after his spring and his last start, like I think he only gave up like 3 hits in his last start over 6 innings, had 78 pitches. And then come, you know, obviously his pitch count rose in here, and he, of course, he's not going to come out of the game if he's got a no hitter, but he comes out throwing like, you know, it was like the 80th pitch in like the 7th inning. And I think that's when you got a little bit worried. I know we'll probably, you know, we'll go into the bullpen too in depth a little bit, but seeing Tim Hill step up, like, how did that make you feel at the time?
Oh, man, I was going to be really upset. It started, I started to get upset. I mean, I understand we're early in the season. These guys haven't gone past 5 or 6 innings, period, and you want to build up that kind of tolerance in your arm, especially with how much they protect the guys' arms these days.
Yeah.
And I started to freak out. I was telling my girlfriend, and I was trying to explain to her like why they would do that. And I even though I get it, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, you don't pull that. You don't pull him out. And after the game, Tingler said that there was no way he was going to pull him. It was only if he gave up a hit.
My guy.
Yeah, I don't know how true that is. But I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, and I'm totally glad that he didn't do it. I think a lot of it too was that his pitch count wasn't crazy high. I mean, to finish at 112, he was really effective. Had he been at 100 plus in the eighth, then we're talking about pulling him. And the other thing that I think that was crucial was just how fast our half of the lineup went in the later innings.
Yes. Which, you know, interesting point, because you know how Kim got on base, it seemed to be dragging out a little. Was that when it happened? Because he got picked off at first in the top of the ninth. I was like, did he get a sign from the dugout potentially to just get a quick out? Or do you think he actually got caught? Because to me, I was like, this might be a little bit of gamesmanship to get Joe up in the ninth quicker than letting the inning drag. I mean, did you think that? Did you think it was just bad base running?
I don't know. I think it was just bad base running. I haven't looked back at the play, to be honest with you, but I think if they were just trying to get out, he would have just stood there and taken like three straight strikes and walked back to the dugout. Cause he had like, it was like an 8-pitch at bat and he drew the walk, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think if they were really just trying to get back to letting him pitch out there, they would have given him the sign before then to just take every single pitch and strike out.
True.
You know, I don't know. He battled up there. It was a long at bat and it was a great at bat. I was so conflicted. I was like, let's go, Kim. Like, great at bat, great walk. But then I was like, no, let's get him back out there. Cause if that extended, if they went on a rally,
yeah, you never know.
I don't know that he goes back out there. And Tingler's put in a really tough position, but luckily Kim got thrown out at first and he was able to go back out there and finish the game off.
Yeah, I have a weird, sneaky feeling that that was on purpose. And there's nothing that could give me credibility for that or back up that plan unless someone literally came out of the coach's, you know, dugout and said, hey, we told him to run. If he steals it, great. If he gets thrown out, great, you know. But I don't know. I had a weird kind of – because you're 3-0, two outs with the lefty on the mound being that aggressive to get to second. Like, I get it because you want to get another run on the board, but I don't know. I just thought that it was kind of a win-win for them. You know, if he gets in scoring position, great. If he gets thrown out, great. But like you said too, I mean, if that inning goes any longer, top of the half inning goes any longer, then that arm starts to get a little cold. I mean, the way that he was even throwing the ball in the ninth, you could tell he was laboring. Like, he was actually leaving a couple leaked over the dish. And that first out, was it the first out when it went to Cronenworth? And then that line drive to Will.
Yeah.
I think that ended the eighth inning. That freaked me out. I was like, no. Like, it was flashback to Chris Young, Tyson Ross type, almost no-nos. But, yeah, the fact that he could close it out, it was like a storybook ending, like we're saying. So, I don't know. And then on top of it, 112 pitches, like you said, his career high before that actually was only 108. So he hasn't, like, 108 pitches isn't that much for a starting pitcher, especially an ace going, you know, as your career high. So 112, that's pretty impressive. And I think we might see a little bit of a higher pitch count too coming up, because I saw something on Twitter too that said that he's actually throwing about 23% fastball sinker. And last year it was in the high 40s. So it might be saving his arm a little bit, but.
Well, he's throwing his cutter a lot more too. Yeah. Like, he was very cutter dominant in that game. But yeah, to your point, basically from when I got home and started rewatching, basically from the sixth on, it was all slider curveball.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, if that's all you're mixing in, they're going to sit back and chances are they're going to get one at some point. So I was like, I kept on yelling at the TV. I was like, dude, mix in a fastball, mix in a cutter. But I mean, it worked. His slider was absolutely disgusting. It was so on. He put it wherever he wanted, and I mean, he was lights out. I still can't believe it, but we finally did it. A couple last no hitter tidbits for you guys. It was Joe Musgrove's first no hitter ever, little league, high school, minor leagues. He's never thrown one, so pretty cool there. It came in our 8,206th game in Padres history. long freaking That's a time. Long games. Victor Caratini, the unsung hero here, called a great game. You could see him coaching him up in the bullpen.
Yeah.
He's been such a steal for us. And he actually caught the last no hitter in baseball last year on the Cubs and is the first catcher to catch consecutive no hitters with different teams. So pretty cool there. I mentioned 23 no hitters through the eighth inning before Friday. And now the Indians have the longest streak of throwing a no hitter. They've gone without one since 1981. So we're officially off the books there. Yeah. And I guess we basically own the Rangers. I wish we could play them 162 games out of the season. Every time we play them, something magical happens, unless Chris Paddock is pitching, but we'll get to that later.
We'll get to that.
I still got the dub. But last final thing, like one of my favorite things is just the quirkiness of baseball. Superstition wise, Walls, I know you mentioned you didn't hear about this, but it's funny. Joe, they ask him, are you superstitious? And he goes, no, but he goes in talking about how he puts a piece of gum on his towel, I guess, after every inning. And he's never had like 9 pieces, basically like that complete game that he did yesterday. And then he drinks a lot of water during the games, and to track how much water he's drinking, he'll keep the bottles. And he said that he drank, I think he had a total of 12 bottles by the end of the game. And that
12 bottles of water.
Yeah.
Like full, like not the little tiny squirt ones. Like
no, like a full bottle. And he said he needed to take a leak by the fourth inning and just like to not mess with the flow. And I think he might've just felt how on he was. He was like, I can't go pee. So he basically played the last sixth inning with the full bladder, just needing to piss. And it's basically like his Jordan game, you know, Jordan flu game, Musgrove piss game. It was pretty spectacular. And then the last one that was really cool to hear about was apparently Snell and Morejon are like boys now. Like they're always kind of hanging out, which is really awesome. Cool to me. I don't understand like how they communicate. Obviously, maybe I guess they're translator, just like third wheels or something.
But, he's fantastic, by the way.
Yeah, they're both awesome. And I guess Snell, in the fifth inning, realized what was happening, and he was sitting. He was like hanging out on the
railing.
On the railing, with Morejon, and Adrian was about to move, and Snell grabs him and goes, "Dude, we're not moving here until this guy gives up a hit." So from the fifth inning to the end of the game, they didn't move at all because they knew what was brewing in the stadium. So.
I love, like, just like how you said that, I love those parts of the game like that, because really, I mean, believe what you want, that really shouldn't matter at all, you know, but it's just the fact that it's like, if Morejon walked away and Musgrove gave up a hit, like Blake Snell probably would have ended that friendship right there. You know, like that's the tension that is created with stuff like that. You see guys with beards in the playoffs, you know, not shaving. That's a big hockey thing as well. Superstitions in hockey is huge. And yeah, even a lot of people, the debate whether or not to mention the no hitter. I know you're a type of guy that you just don't even want to hear about it. Like, don't talk about it. Knock on wood. You know, karma can be a son of a gun sometimes, and so you just don't mention it. Me, on the other hand, I'm more. Sometimes I'm really superstitious. Sometimes I'm not. And I don't know, just during that night, there were certain things that, like, I heard people, like, they wouldn't move from their couch, kind of like Morejon and Snell, you know, like sit in the same exact position. I don't think I had a really superstitious moment during that night, other than the fact that I had almost never been that nervous since I had been playing sports in the past. But did you do anything that was superstitious personally? Like,
mention it. As far as a no-hitter goes, I am superstitious. And had I realized what was going on at the bar, I don't think I would have let us leave. But I didn't realize it until I got home. So
on the tablet.
Yeah, exactly. I would have ran. Oh, if we were there, I would have gotten very drunk. Let's just leave it at that. We only left because I had to work on Saturday, so it probably worked out for the best. But I don't talk about it. Like I said, I threw my phone in my room. I didn't move from my spot on the couch. I'm very superstitious about that.
First of all, I can't sit still to begin with. So when something like that arises, like I probably walked about a mile in the kitchen, just like back and forth. Like I couldn't do it. I was on the phone with my girlfriend too, the last like two innings. And I was just like, I don't know. The amount of anxiety and emotions running through, especially that eighth, ninth inning, you're like, holy crap, something could happen.
Funny enough though, is we've been through quite a few of these, and I've always been extremely nervous.
Yeah.
This one, I was a lot more like calm. I mean, once we got to the last two outs, maybe in the ninth inning, I was like, wow, this was actually going to happen. I don't know if it was one because I've seen it too often before and I just expected something to happen.
Yeah, you're like, it's just, don't get my hopes up. Yeah.
Or if it's just something about this team that I expect them to break all Padres norms. You know what I mean? But I was not that. I was nervous, but I was way more calm than usual. I was just like, okay. Like, let's see what happens this inning, you know? And then, but once the ninth inning came, I was like, oh my God, this might happen.
This is crazy.
But don't say anything. Crazy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No,
don't say anything.
Yeah. I don't know. Just even talking about it now, it's still kind of unreal that it happened. You know, you just think back, but what a night for San Diego too. I mean, and then just to go off your point with the Rangers, I mean, so dating back to not only last year, but 2019, the last game of the year that we played them, we hit a grand slam. It was either 2019 or 2018, whenever we played them before 2020. The last game of the year, we hit a grand slam. And then three games in a row, obviously last year, the origin of Slam Diego was in Arlington. So four games in a row, they hit a grand slam. And so this fifth game, you're like, hey, we're going to hit another grand slam. And like, you know, jokingly. And they're like, nah, I think we're going to whip out our first no hitter in franchise history.
Easy, but, easy money. Congratulations to No Joe, Java Joe, Father Joe, whatever you want to call him. He's a stud. He is immortalized in San Diego history forever now. So it's awesome. And to keep on the Joe Musgrove theme, this week's walk-up song analysis, I guess it's still a walk-up song. They still hit, is Joe Musgrove. We are going to add some metrics to our rating system. So first off is slappability.
Do you want to play the sound bit for them real quick?
Sure. And then I'll explain it.
Boom.
The song Vampire by Tribal Seeds, absolute great song. We'll get into that. So
yeah,
new metrics for this week and moving forward, we're going to have to redo Cronenworth's at some point. So metric one, slappability, for all my older folks, all my boomers out there, when a song slaps, that means it is a ditty. It is a bopper. It is a
quality
banger. It is a quality good song. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Number two would be hype. How pumped up does that song get you? And then number three is uniqueness. How unique is the song? All right.
Have you heard of it before? Is it a T Swift kind of walk up where you're like, I've heard that a million times on the radio? Or is it Vampire from Tribal Seeds that some of you have never heard before?
So lead us off, Walls. Break the three down, and then we'll do a composite score at the end, or we can follow up with the composite score later.
Gotcha. I think just before I get into the slappability, Tribal Seeds, just them being local, is probably going to bump these ratings up a little bit. But slappability, I don't think it's something that I'd work out to per se. but I guess that would kind of go more under the hypeness a little bit. But slapability, I'm going to give it a 8.2. Okay. Obviously, you can tell that we enjoy reggae with our intro to the podcast every time.
Yeah.
But slapability, I'm going to give it 8.2. Hype, I probably would have went a little bit lower until now it's associated with this no-hitter. So hype, I'm probably going to go an 8.5 on this one.
Wow.
Yep. Just because now that I hear it, I probably, to be honest with you, I probably would have went more high sixes, low sevens
before
last Friday. And now when I hear it, I'm like, whew, here we go. And then uniqueness, I think I'm going to go high on this one. I think I'm going to go 9.5 on the uniqueness. Just because, like I said, local band, local kid. Now this song means so much more to San Diego. So I'm going 9.5 on the uniqueness. But how are you going to rate these three categories? What do you got for slapability?
Okay, so yours, composite score of an 8.73, pretty high. Pretty high, I'm not going to lie to you. Slapability for me, I like reggae. I'm a big like reggae on the golf course guy, but as far as everyday vibes, I don't listen to it a whole lot. But this song, I'm going to be honest with you, never heard of it. Never heard it before. Up until when I saw him pitch last Saturday, I was like, oh, okay, this is a good song. So I added it to the playlist, mixed it in recently, and it, let me tell you, it is a absolute rave banger. I'm a big fan. Nines are hard to get. They're hard to come by out here, so it's not going to be a 9 for me, but I'm going to call that one an 8.6, especially on the reggae slapability scale. Maybe we're too... Yeah, the reggae slapability scale.
Now
we might be too easy, but maybe we're just coming off the Joe Musgrove high on the hype scale. Listen, that intro, the like the little horns that come in, it's like an action movie, maybe some like Pirates of the Caribbean vibes, like while they're like sailing the high seas. I'm gonna match you there. I hate to match people, but 8.5 seems to be really spot on. And then on the uniqueness scale, San Diego kid, this guy embodies San Diego. Saw a photo of him at Petco when he won probably his like best player of San Diego award, rocking the old school band. He is San Diego at the core. This song just adds to that mystique. I'm not going to go 9.5. 9.5 is basically a perfect score in my book, but he's pretty close. I'm going to go 8.9. So, pretty strong. I think we started off with two of the best walk-up songs, period, on the team. It's going to be hard to top Crone. We're going to have to redo his rating at some point in the coming weeks. But, for me, that's a composite of, I clearly can't do math right now because I just got a 2 point something.
I think it's like an 8.7, just about. Yeah, 8.7.
Okay. Maybe yeah, 8.6. So we're pretty close. So when you were reading off your scores, I was like, okay, that's actually basically what I was going to say. So I'm going to try to switch it up a little, but it's hard to do. It was a great song.
Yeah.
Vampire by Tribal Seeds. Once again, if you don't have it, listen to it. It's an absolute banger.
On the reggae bangability slapability scale, the
reggae slapability scale. Walls, you want to lead us through a little weekly recap, some of your thoughts on the games?
So the first series in the week, which seems like a distant memory now after all the emotions that have been overspent from Friday night and beyond, we played the Giants 3-game series. The series as a whole was very flat to me. It felt like the bats were quiet. Pitching wasn't terrible. It wasn't amazing. No, it was actually pretty dang good. I think we only gave up like 3 runs. So I take that back. Pitching was really good. The bats were just quiet, you know, and I think Tatis going down and getting hurt kind of deflated the team a little bit because there's a lot of unknowns. You know, you saw on Twitter, you saw everyone was just talking about it. Like, yo, is he done for the year? Is he having surgery now? Is he going to be back tomorrow? Like, no, there was so much you know, speculation. But to get into the actual game, Morihone started game one on Monday night. He looked solid. He still isn't quite there lengthwise. I think that was his career high in innings pitched for in a Padres uniform and just in the majors in general. A little bit under five innings. He looked good. Knuckle curve is looking really solid. I think he gave up two home runs that game, just two mistakes. That's all it takes. If you throw it over the middle of the plate, you're going to get punished. And that's what happened. And then your boy, Craig Stammen, comes in. And actually, to be honest with you, it had a pretty good first inning, to be fair.
Yeah, that looks good. Here's the thing. I hate Stammen. Everyone knows that. But the one innings, the first inning of the outings that he's pitched is fine. Just keep him at one. If you're going to keep him, Tingler, keep him at one. Every time we've gone past one, that's when he gives up the home runs. Like, they just need to get him out of the game after one inning. He's a one inning guy, and that's it. Nothing else. He's been mismanaged.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I know that he used to be a starter for the Nationals way back when, in like the 70s or 80s, something like that. And so I think Tingler's trying to dip into that fountain of youth a little bit, use him as a little elongated middle reliever. It's not his role. It's just not. And I think he's trying to reinvent the Craig role in a sense, because we're so loaded at the back end. So typically with your guys at the front end of the bullpen, you want them to at least go a couple if need be, like in this case, because Morihone got pulled in the fifth, if I'm not mistaken, then, you know, you're trying to elongate that role. That's just not his role. So we'll see how the rest of the year goes. I know he's getting paid $4 million this year, so I think that has something to do with it. Doesn't have options, obviously, and whatnot. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see him on the roster for a while, but have a sneaky, maybe an injury list where, you know, maybe Austin Adams comes up, trips him, gives him a little scrape on the elbow, and they put him on the IL for 10 days or so, just to kind of mix it up a little bit. Wouldn't be surprised. And then one guy to highlight, just because the bats were so quiet, Caratini, we went into it a little bit when we were going over the no-hitter analysis. He has arguably been the best pickup of the year, which obviously
today, I mean,
yeah, Musgrove probably.
Yeah.
But the amount of credit that Caratini was given by Joe, like, you could just tell how much he called him the scientist, you know, like he just how much he meant to that, to that success that game. So, but 1-for-2, 2 RBIs, got he's turning into a fan favorite for sure. A little carrot teeny. So anything you want to add to game one, that 3-2 L that we took there?
No, I think you hit it all. Actually, just how crazy is it that we're, because of the no hitter, we're just glossing over that our star cornerstone.
Yeah.
Shortstop got hurt.
Partial dislocation. No big deal.
I know, but it was scary. I was at the game and the stadium was dead silent. You know, he just dropped down. Non-contact injuries are always very, very scary. It definitely deflated the team. It sucked the life out of the ballpark and they just couldn't recover after that. But looks like he's doing better. No surgery required. Saw him taking some BP yesterday and he's holding on to that bat with two hands now. So hopefully as long as he's careful and takes more care of it, it's something that he can play through for the rest of the year successfully, hopefully. And then maybe in the off season, if he feels like he needs to, he can get some additional maybe surgery or whatever. I'm not a physical therapist, but I'm assuming you can get something to,
or Dr. Lowe's on the call.
Yeah, to make it better. Game two, good rebound from game one, 3-1 victory. Darvish looked really good. 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run. And then the bullpen just doing what the bullpen does. Kella, Pagan, Melanson, lights out, no runs. I think they retired the last 14 guys, whatever that is.
Yeah.
79, 12, 13.
I think it was 12 guys. Yeah.
Yeah, 12. Good math. 3 times 4, 12. retired and all consecutively. Like, those guys are insane. Melanson's a beast. They've been lights out. We'll touch on how good they have been. But again, Caratini coming in clutch, home run, two RBI shot, put us in the lead, and we didn't look back from there. Our bullpen shut us down. Yeah. You got anything there you want to add? Game two?
Just quickly, Caratini catching Darvish, obviously, since he played and he's his personal catcher, but 6 innings, 3 hits, and an earned run from Darvish. Clearly, Caratini has something to do with that. I know Darvish, obviously, is the one pitching, but he is, again, quickly becoming this unsung hero. So we could see if he can continue to do that. He's the type of depth piece in a team that allows you to go deep in October. So, again, way early on, and we'll see. But I think this acquisition has been sneakily one of the best from Peller. We pretty much got him for nothing. So,
yeah.
Shout out AJ per usual. But game three, all that, yeah, good for me on game two. Game three, 3-2 loss. So, as you can see, we scored, what was it, 7 runs? Apparently, I can't do math either today. 7 runs in 3 games. That bats were quiet. They just looked flat. It wasn't, I mean, give credit to the Giants rotation too. When we highlighted them last year and broke it down, they did not have very good advanced metrics, but they made us look off balance and we looked flat. I think there was a lot of energy in that first series that was kind of spent. And so you come in on a Monday morning to work and just weren't really feeling it. But yeah, Snell on the bump that day, 5 innings, 2 earned with the unfortunate glance off Mateo's glove in center field. So, I mean, it probably should have been at least 1 run, but he looked good. He had a ton of strikeouts, 4 walks though. So a little bit wild. And so that ran the pitch count up. And then, yeah, like I said, tough day for Mateo. He had a really poor looking at bat there in the 9th, and Tucapita Marcano with being the pinch hitter to end the game as well.
I don't get it. Yeah.
No, one career hit.
Yeah, that didn't make sense to me at all. I don't know why they brought him in. I was pretty upset to see that.
Yeah.
Just not the right call. But overall, they didn't look right. The pitching was there. I mean, if your staff holds them to 3 runs every single game, especially with the lineup that we have, it's unacceptable to not win those games. The pitchers did what they were asked to do. And 3 runs is more than enough for us to overcome.
Oh, yeah.
They just weren't there.
Definitely. And then I think this is where Tingler's inexperience came to play as well. Just like how we were saying with Stammen being mismanaged a little bit. I did not like that last sequence at all when we start out the 10th. First of all, Tim Hill totally threw that game away, unfortunately, in the top half there by hesitating on that little nubber to first. But that's okay. We move on. Coming out, the new rule that stuck around this year, which we can probably get in a different pod, bring it up, is you start off the inning with a runner on second base in extra innings to kind of speed the game up so it doesn't go 12, 13, 14, 15 innings and destroy your bullpen for a week or two. And yeah,
came out last year.
Implemented it again this year. Yep, thanks for that. And we had a guy on second down a run and we're trying to get Kim to bunt, which just I didn't really agree. I'd rather him swing the bat, to be brutally honest with you, see what he can do. Ended up getting the guy to third. And then, like we said, Mateo with a bad at bat there, just 3 straight swings and misses, balls out of the zone. So definitely not our best game, kind of cherry on top for that series, but that's right. We move. And anything you want to add on to that game? Or series?
No. Rangers series, obviously, no hitter game one. Game two, Paddock looked really, really shaky. Again, only 4 innings, 3 earned. He looked pissed off on the bench.
He looked mad.
As he should. He needs to figure it out, man. I'm trying my hardest to stay positive on him and pull for him, but I just don't see it. On the bright side, the bullpen continues to be just
lights out.
I mean, Weathers gave up a home run and then he looked sharp. It doesn't bother him. The guy's got the right stuff between the ears, and Kella looked good. Melanson looked good. Palm looked good. They're insane. Now we're getting Austin Adams back. And once these guys on the IL keep getting healthy and come back, our bullpen is just going to be,
we're adding reinforcements bananas. And we're first in the league right now.
Yeah, our last 7 games, our bullpen has 3 earned runs over 29 innings pitched, good for a 0.91 ERA, and that is first in the majors. So we're first in the majors, and we're still going to bring back some of our better relievers that are hurt right now. It's insane. We can't ask for anything more. So we just need run support is what it comes down to. Because even then, our pitching has given up some runs, but over the last 7 days, 18 earned runs over 82 innings pitched, good for 1.98 ERA, first in the majors. So
the pitching is there. Game? Like, yeah. Tell me you can't have a chance to win every single game.
Yeah. You know, the pitching is there, and that's overall pitching. Sorry. Stats for team overall pitching, but 2, earned runs a game, first in the majors. That's plenty for us to overcome, and the bats just have not been there. Even the starters, 2.28 ERA, 0.95 WHIP, good for 4th in the majors. That's stellar.
With Paddock in the rotation,
With Paddock, take him out, bring Lamet in, and it's game over for everyone.
It is. And then
anything you want to hit on the Ranger game before we move on to our last couple segments?
Yeah, I mean, we're recording before the Sunday afternoon game, morning game here, afternoon in Texas. So we don't have any analysis on that. But yeah, I think we dove enough into that no hitter for sure. That second game, it looks like the bats are coming alive a little bit. So
yeah,
hopefully we can keep that rolling. And then just quick point on Weathers, gives up a home run, and then right after that, you would have no idea. If you turn the game on right after that, you would have no clue. The kid does not get rattled at all at 21 years old. It's very impressive. But what I was going to say about the pitching, Lamet, here we go. Lamet did have I think he went 3 1/3 or 3 2/3 in Peoria at the alternatives training site, gave up a home run, and per AJ Casville had plenty of strikeouts. They didn't have the exact number, but he looks like, and Tingler mentioned this too, he looks like he's coming close-ish to a return, barring any setbacks. So this should be interesting in the next couple of weeks. We will keep you posted on that. To continue off the Musgrove train, which he just seems to be doing everything, can't do anything wrong at the moment. Dating back to last year, 31 consecutive scoreless innings. That is unreal. That is so impressive as a starting pitcher. And then you have a point right here as well that we want to just trying to touch on all this, because I know we're running a little bit long right now.
Yeah, Cronenworth.
Yeah.
Everyone knows I'm a Crone guy. And his at-bats, his approach at the plate, we've talked about a lot, but he has big boy at-bats up there, man. I think yesterday he went 2 for 2 with 2 walks. And the last 3 at-bats, he just got the pitch count up to 8 or 9 on each one.
Tough out.
I love what I see from him. I know Kim is heating up, and I love Kim. First home run yesterday, so stoked for him.
Yeah,
we need to find a way to keep Crone in the lineup, because if someone that gets on base at his clip and the at bats that he has and runs up the pitch count like him, mm-hmm. can't take him out.
Completely agree. And just a real quick Profar too. Although I think his batting average is okay right now, he is having some fantastic at-bats as well. Him and Cronenworth are just running that pitch count up. Just want to throw that in there.
Yeah, and then Grish, like you said, back yesterday, spark plug, 4 for 8 over the last 2 games, home run and 2 RBIs, our true leadoff guy. So good to have him back, and the swagger. And, yeah, he's just a spark plug for our team, the energy he brings. I think he's going to get the bats going, and you can already kind of see it. This coming week, we're going to need it. We're playing the Pirates, Monday through Wednesday, I believe. No, through Thursday. I think it's a 4-game series. Padres fly back after Thursday, or maybe it's Tuesday through Thursday. Anyway, we got the Pirates.
Yeah. You're right. Monday through Thursday, 4 games.
Monday through Thursday. And then we got the Dodgers Friday through Sunday. So the bats are going to need a heat up, especially when we're playing against arguably the other best rotation in baseball, the dreaded Dodgers. So should be fun. I want to see the bats heat up, the pitching keep doing what they're doing, and we're gonna hopefully sweep the Dodgers.
Yeah, and supposedly Tatis is on track to be to come back that Friday for the first series too. So
yeah, that's right.
Let's hope that that's the case. But just looking at the schedule too, we have a long stretch of games. We go Texas, Pittsburgh, fly back that Thursday night, play the Dodgers Friday through Sunday, like you said, then home series against the Brewers Monday through Wednesday, and then away at the Dodgers for four games Thursday yeah. through Sunday. So it's going to be a tough, tough stretch here coming up.
Huge, so. Huge series with the Dodgers and a lot of travel. So it'll yep. be, it's going to be tough, but I think I expect them to go out there and compete every day as they always do. Everyone make sure you say a couple Hail Marys, a couple Our Fathers before you go to bed for Tatis's shoulder and Lamet's elbow. Get on those knees, people, and pray every night, every morning, at least twice a day. We need those to be protected. Last thing before we get out of here, got a mailbag. Thank you to everyone who asked questions. This is awesome. We've been wanting to do something like this. We'll kind of just switch off. I'll start with Mr. Patrick Walls, 79. Walls, very interesting last name. I wonder if he shares any relation. Does cool. Paddock's future look better in the bullpen, or can he make being a top starter work? I don't know, man. I think he has the stuff, or he shows the potential for the stuff to be a starter. The mentals aren't there. And he started to throw the curveball there yesterday a couple times. So that's a positive. And he didn't look too bad, in my opinion.
Yeah, so it's one inning again that just keeps killing him.
Yeah, I think he can make it work, but I think he's going to be a better bullpen piece in the future. But I don't think he has the mentality to be a bullpen piece. Maybe like a one inning sixth guy. I don't know. He's not a high leverage guy, clearly. Not right now. I don't trust him to come in with guys on base. So I don't know. The verdict's still out. I have no idea with this guy. I can't figure him out.
Yeah, I don't know if he's maybe an option where he gets optioned potentially to AAA to figure it out, or be like, hey, because I know he's probably going to want to continue to be a starter. But and then our bullpen's so stacked too. But we mentioned this real quick last pod too, but good question, Patrick. Thanks for chiming in and supporting per usual. But yeah, I think that two pitch mix that he has could potentially, you know, wind him up in the bullpen if he wants to stay in the league. If he continues this trajectory, he's gonna have to fight for his spot. So I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised. I think with his mentality, he could probably be a closer, at least the intensity that he brings. I also think that he's going to have to mature and learn the game. And you got to remember too, when he came up, he didn't pitch at all in AAA whatsoever. So maybe we pushed him a little bit too quick. We might dial that back. And then next one from Padre Muerta, how good was Profar? And you know, he said how good Profar was, what he wanted to talk about. And we mentioned that with his at-bats recently, been a huge catalyst. He played first in the no-hit game. He played right field yesterday. They have him going all over the place, and he's our little Curacao Army knife over here. So,
dude, he played first base on Friday, and he played a stellar first base. Good defense out there. I always forget how good he is in the field. And honestly, like, I know we have some big Hosmer fans out there, but the way Haas and Tatis have been playing, man, I don't know that we get that no-hitter Friday, honestly, like with their defense. I might get some hate on that, but I'm glad Kim and Profar were out there. They played so – they were the two unsung heroes for me on that game. So, yeah, shout-out to Profar. He's absolutely killing it this year so far.
Yeah. And then last part, Jake at Nota Pitmaster. Kim's defense, just to piggyback off that point. He did have an error yesterday. I noticed that he goes for the backhand, actually.
Hate it.
Yeah, I don't like it. And he did have an error yesterday because of that. And like that, the last out for the no hitter, that backhand to short, I was like, oh my gosh, like all it takes is a sketchy bounce. You know,
hate it so much. It made me so nervous on Friday. And he's a good fielder. He's got a cannon of an arm. He does. But I hate how he takes ground balls. It makes me so freaking nervous. No,
just square up in front of it. And then Jake said that he needs to speed up his throws. I agree. I think he leaves it a little bit late, but with that being said, he hasn't been late yet. Hopefully that doesn't come back to bite him. He does have kind of a little bit of a long you know, cocking of the arm for his release, but he has a cannon. So I think he relies on that a little bit. And then, yeah, he also said, like we've been saying the whole episode, Caratini's just been this supremely underrated acquisition. Couldn't agree with you more, Jake. Again, thanks guys for chiming in for the quick little mailbag. And before we get out of here, we always like to do our little shout outs. Do you want to I'll take the first one. Maria at that Hosgirl_1. She's been interacting with us a ton lately. Thanks for that, Maria. It's been awesome. We've had a lot of, this is a tough week to pick a few because we've had a lot of interactions and love this past week. So thank you for that, Maria. You want to take the second one here?
Yeah. Kendall, Big Need 619. Thanks for hitting us up. Thanks for following us. Appreciate it. Also, Mike on the radio, our guy, he had a mailbag question. Basically just about our bullpen. Mark Melanson needs to get a little more love. Absolutely agree. He's been killer, the psychopath that we always talk about at that closer role. So shout out to Mike. And then last one, shout out to M, our girl, M Parker @_M Parker. Thanks for following. Thanks for interacting. Thanks for listening.
Love the fact that she defends Machado to the grave. Yes.
To the grave.
Absolutely love that. And sorry about that, Mike. Glossed over that real quick.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This is a Manny Machado defender podcast. We will defend him to the grave always. Final thoughts, anything you got for the people?
Next start, you heard it here first. Joe Musgrove going second no-hitter back-to-back.
That would be awesome. For me, just again, say your Our Fathers every night for Tatis's shoulder and Lamet's elbow. And as always, go Pods, not the Dodgers. They suck. The Frogers, Mickey Mouse ring. We overshadowed them on the ring ceremony with the freaking no hitter. Let's go. Go Pods all day. SD.
This is out, apparently. Later, guys.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Podfathers, a Slam Diego Padres podcast. The Podfathers is produced by Los and Walls and is executively produced by Jacob Lamb.
Our theme song is A Bubba by Trilock. To get in touch with the show, follow us on Twitter at Podfathers619. That is at PADFATHERS619, or email us at podfathers@gmail.com. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other major audio platforms.
Go Pods!